Good Sunday morning. This is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. I'm Kate Doherty. My co-host, Keely Reger. We have Brad Kurz sitting in this morning, one of Down Country's board members and on the advisory council for Down Country. But we are excited and delighted to have the amazing Stacey Taylor with us this morning.
I'm just a little giddy, Kate, because I actually got to hear Stacey speak in Orlando. And I got to tell you, Stacey, I am a huge fan.
You guys are so sweet. Thank you for having me. Yeah. Good morning.
Yeah, well, good morning. So Stacey's specialty is all things behavior, and she also has her own school, which we're going to get into all of this. But one of the things that makes Stacey so unique is she speaks what we call the educational and the medical model, because she has her bachelor's in psychology, her master's in education, and she's a board-certified behavior analyst. And actually, I think you've even come up to the Tri-States. What have we had you up here, twice now or just once?
I've been up there twice.
That's what I thought.
I've been up there twice with Down Country, but I've also gone up to St. Louis, and I've been up there for a few different groups, and I love it up there. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. We love having you, so hopefully we can get you back. So we literally a couple weeks ago had Michael Ramos on the show, and we didn't get to talk about this behavior piece. But one of the things we touched on was, you know, you have a kiddo sitting there at the desk, and he's tapping the pencil over and over and over again. And all the kids in the class are staying on task, but it's driving the teacher crazy. And so kiddo sometimes keeps getting in trouble for tapping his pencil. Whose behavior do we need to correct, Stace?
Well, I'd love to hear what Michael Ramos had to say about that. I can tell you, you know, one of the toughest things about working in schools and working with teachers is making sure to be really sensitive about the fact that you're working within a system and being sensitive to the fact that you're going into the teacher's house now. I mean, not literally, but figuratively.
Sure.
And we want to always, you know, understand that when you're working with a teacher and you're walking into their classroom, that is their classroom family, and in a sense, that's their home. So we have to always understand that, you know, there's going to be certain things that day in, day out, 6 hours a day, you know, 180 days a school year, that's going to get on a teacher's nerves.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, part of my job when I go in and what I really try to work with teachers to do is to prioritize and to really kind of help understand what do we need to work on? What's the most important thing for this child? And sometimes we call these things junk behaviors, and we got to really focus on what's real and what's junk. And if that's happening, if it's just a nuisance, it falls in that junk category. So we can't just intervene on everything that bothers us. We got to think about what's really valuable as far as our educational time and energy. If you try to intervene on everything, you'll intervene on nothing at the end of the day. And that's really what it comes down to. And but you can't walk in on day one, second one, and communicate that to a teacher, or you'll never get them really on board with you, because I wouldn't want somebody coming into my home and walking around and telling me that everything I do is wrong either.
So
you really need to make sure that you establish a good communication with a teacher before you start talking to them about changing their behavior, their strategies, their environment. But it's a doable thing. And I tell parents and I tell administrators and I tell teachers that all the time.
So you were talking about their classroom being their home. So when you go in and speak to them, do you basically say, okay, what are your house rules? What are your basic house rules? And then from there, you know, kind of paint that picture for us.
That's a great question. And yeah, that's exactly what we do, because every house and every educational house, every classroom has different rules. So you do need to go in and you need to understand, well, what does this teacher really see as a priority? Some teachers allow kids to speak at a low volume in the class all day long. All day long. Some teachers don't care if a kid ever raises their hand. And some teachers believe that if a child doesn't raise their hand, they have committed a cardinal sin. So you really need to understand the difference in the teacher's perspective on who their students are and what the behaviors that are expected are in the classroom. So you really want to kind of get that up front from a teacher so you know, okay, well, what do I really need to help this teacher get from this student? And that's disability or not. So I say that all the time. You know, none of this has to do with Down syndrome or autism or CP. This just has to do with behavior. And all of us engage in behavior sometimes that are appropriate, inappropriate, and we need to work on learning new things. So understanding from a teacher perspective what's important to them is always step one.
You know, one of the things I remember from listening to you present is you also did this, and I don't remember what the child had he had something he was doing in class, but then so the teacher actually had come up with a replacement behavior. However, for whatever reason, the replacement behavior ended up leading to the child banging his head. I can't remember if it was on a desk or a wall. And so the replacement behavior that we had worked towards, so we ended up going back to basically the original behavior. And I think you did a really good kind of cost analysis of when we look at replacing behavior, what exactly is it that we're replacing?
Right.
Because in this particular case, what we replaced it with was actually ended up being worse than the original behavior. And so it was quite a process, but I loved how you kind of did that cost analysis in your workshop.
Well, and I think what happens is that people get the right idea often about, okay, well, we need to teach something new. But I think sometimes we kind of almost mess up what we're teaching, or we may only teach just one behavior. And so we're really putting all our eggs in this single basket. And so if that one behavior doesn't work on an occasion, that one behavior breaks down, what'll mm-hmm. happen is the child will resort to the original repertoire. And mm-hmm. that's not just children, that's adults. That happens to all of us. So if I only have one solution to a problem and my solution doesn't work, mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to the solution that worked before, which
right.
is that problem behavior. So if I have originally screamed to get attention, and now you have taught me to raise my hand to get attention, but then on this day, your back is turned, and you don't see me raising my hand, and I've raised my hand 10 times, but it's an unlucky day, and your back has been turned 10 times, what mm-hmm. do you think I'm going to do? The only thing I know that has worked besides raising my hand.
Right.
So we have to remember that whenever we replace a behavior, it's important to consider to think of more than one behavior to replace it with. So I always tell people, don't put your eggs in one basket. Think about more than one behavior. Can the child also learn to raise their hand and maybe approach and tap the teacher on the shoulder? If you don't want them leaving their desk, can they do something audible so the teacher can hear if the child cannot speak? Can they ring a bell? If the child can speak, can they say the teacher's name?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to think of both vocal and non-vocal strategies to get that teacher's attention, because raising the hand will break down in any classroom situation. I see it all the time.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great. I like the plan A and the plan B. You have a great way of putting that in very common sense, real terms that I always enjoy when I listen to you very much. So, Brad, do you have any questions for Ms. Stacy right now?
Well, I was interested, as you talked about that, what I'm hearing you say is how important it is for us to figure out what the student is trying to solve with their behavior and make sure that our solutions don't just eliminate the behavior but help that student to solve their problem.
Absolutely. And that comes down, that's a good point, Brad, because what that comes down to is this common understanding in our field and in the science of behavior, which is that behavior is functional. And,
yes.
and when you understand that, I in the beginning of my career, I tell the story of how I had a professor once that I wrote a paper for, and I wrote in my paper that the child's behavior was dysfunctional, and she marked it out with the ultimate red pen, which, you know, is never good when you're in college and you see that red pen on your paper, and she crossed it out and she just put no in capital letters, and I'm like, uh-oh, that's not a good sign. And so when I brought it to her, I said, well, what does this mean? And she said, behavior is never dysfunctional. And she just kind of looked at me, and I digested that for a minute, and I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah, behavior is never dysfunctional. It always has purpose. It always has reason. It may not be appropriate. It may not be right.
Mm-hmm.
But to the child or to the adult who's engaging in it, it's right to them. It may not be right to us. It's purposeful for them. We may not like it. So when you think about it, Brad, I think you really, that's exactly what we're doing, is we're trying to find, well, what are they trying to solve? What's the rationale for them? So whether or not you consider it appropriate, well, that's fine, but it's always functional. It can't ever be considered dysfunctional. So when we approach a problem behavior in that fashion, it really opens up the doors to a better analysis than just coming at it from the perspective of, that's a bad kid, he's a hitter, he's a biter, she's a spitter, she throws things. When you do that, you're putting the problem behavior inside the child. But when you look at it from a, what's this child trying to tell us? What's this behavior trying to tell us? What's happening here? That's a better way to analyze it, because it really opens up the door to problem solving on our part. And then going back to what we were talking about earlier, looking at, well, what can we do in the environment? What can I do as a parent? What can I do as a teacher? What can I do as a speech pathologist to help improve that behavior? And it gives us a lot more power when you think about it.
Yeah, excellent.
Oh, I don't believe it. You are amazing. And I love how you put these things in just real life, real world examples. And we are already coming to the close of our first segment. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Hashtag Everyone, talking about Hashtag Everything. And this morning, we're talking about behavior with Stacey Taylor. We will be right back.
Calling all self-advocates, family members, and professionals who are interested in applying for Downcountry scholarships. Go to upatdowncountry.com for more information and to obtain a scholarship application. Still have questions? Call 217-617-3568 and Kate Doherty will guide you through the process. Don't delay. This is an amazing opportunity to gain access to national and international conferences to further your knowledge and receive CEUs. Visit upatdowncountry.com today.
Don't you think it's time for a financial advisor who takes time to explain things? Brad Kurz, your local Edward Jones financial advisor, does. Investing can seem complicated. That's why he takes time to listen, understands your needs, and explains without jargon. Experience the Edward Jones difference. Contact Brad today, 573-221-1302. That's 221-1302. Making time to take time. That's how Edward Jones makes sense of investing. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. Every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. Up at downcountry.com or call 217-617-3568. 217-617-3568 or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag every child. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hashtag Everyone, talking about Hashtag Everything. I'm Kate Doherty with my co-host Keely Rager. We've got Brad Kurz, Downcountry board member, sitting in. And we are talking with the delightful Stacey Taylor from Florida on behavior. And we had just an awesome off-air discussion that I wish we could share with you guys. But as part of that, one of the things we're going to start this segment off is there was recently this really great quote by a lady by the name of Rebecca Eanes, and she basically says, when we look at behavior, we stop seeing the child and only look with an intent to judge whether we need to reward or punish. When we look behind the behavior, we see that little struggling human, our little human, who needs our help with something. And on the break, we were talking about that natural consequence, reward, punishment, you know, the purpose of behavior. Stace, I'm going to let you go from here.
Well, and, you know, it's so hard, you know, when I read quotes like that, I never know if the person's intent is on, well, I had a negative experience with a behavior plan, or if the person's intent is, I had a great experience with this behavior plan because mm-hmm. the person really saw the full context that my child was in. So what I will say is a good behavior plan and a good teacher, behavior analyst, school psychologist, parent who's assisting with writing the behavior plan should look past just that behavior and look at that full context that that child's in, as we talked about before the break. When you just are looking at one piece of information, that's not enough information to tell us how to help that child. Now, I do think that oftentimes behavior analysis, or ABA as it's sometimes called, gets a little bit of a ding because people automatically assume, oh, well, these behavioral people, they don't care about what my child's thinking, about what my child's feeling. And quite honestly, that's never been my experience with kids or with the therapists that I work with. But I do think when you don't have enough training in how to develop a plan, you're going to get a plan that's going to do exactly what that writer talked about. Mm-hmm. So I do kind of wonder in the back of my mind if she had a negative experience. And mm-hmm. what she really felt was, hey, did this plan maybe come across as something that didn't really take into account my whole child.
Mm-hmm.
But a good plan should. A good plan should look at mm-hmm. what things are triggering the behavior, mm-hmm. what things could prevent it from happening to begin with, mm-hmm. what things are functioning to really continue the behavior, and how do we prevent that from happening? How do we help teach new skills, as we talked about before? What natural consequences, as I think Keely made a comment about just a moment ago. Well, what kind of natural consequences could be in place? What sort of consequences could we put in place that would help the child learn new behaviors and stop these problem behaviors from occurring. But again, these plans should be whole child plans. And if they're not, then they're not good plans, period, end of story.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's where a lot of these plans come fall short, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's totally true. So switching, doing a radical switch here.
Squirrel.
You have started a school. How about you tell us about that and the philosophy behind it?
Sure. That is a radical switch.
There we go.
It turned my brain. So basically, well, what we did was, you know, I've been in the field working with children in clinic, in homes, and in school settings for a little over 18 years now, and have loved it, honestly. And I've gotten the opportunity to travel around the country working with other schools and families and doing presentations for groups like Down Country. And I've really enjoyed seeing other parts of the country. And what it kind of opened my eyes to is that there were different opportunities in different areas, some for good and some areas that maybe didn't have as many opportunities as we had here in Florida. But definitely we started to notice that what we were seeing here in Florida was a lack of diversity in the way that schools were set up. Mm-hmm. We were noticing that there were, what we were jokingly saying at our staff meetings, darn good private schools that had the opportunity for children who were either very wealthy or well-connected to join. But if those children were either not wealthy, not well-connected, or, goodness gracious, had any kind of special education needs, they were frankly not welcome in the school. Then on the other end of the spectrum, we had these therapeutic schools that were available that were very intensive, very therapy-driven. They didn't really resemble schools. They really resembled more all-day therapy clinic programs. So they were a school day. They were even certified and licensed as schools, but they didn't look like any school that you and I had been to. They didn't resemble the elementary school's experience or the middle school experience that we had, which was a shame because, frankly, a lot of the parents really wanted that for their kids. You know, they didn't have art and they didn't go to music or PE. Mm-hmm. So we kind of were experiencing a little bit of a disconnect with what we felt like kids needed, which was a darn good school that mm-hmm. had the ability to kind of include a more diverse group of students. We knew that we needed it to be small class size because we knew that best practice would call for that, especially in a diverse group of students. If you're talking about kids maybe coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds, perhaps with different educational needs, we didn't want it to be a class of 20. So we settled on a class size of 12 with a teacher and a full-time teaching assistant, so a 1-to-6 ratio. We followed some of the research on best practices in education, integrating a lot of technology. All of our students at the school have their own iPads that integrate our full curriculum. Our core math and core reading curriculum stream onto the iPads, so the students have the kind of experience of technology when they need it for accommodations and support, but then they also have textbooks, of course, as well. And they have a full school experience, including specials, after-school clubs, snack, recess, lunch, in a really supportive environment. So it's really kind of the best of what the research suggests is right in education and then meeting the needs of truly a diverse group of kids, which is really cool to see.
But it's not a private school. Is that what I hear you saying?
Oh, it is.
No, it is a private school.
In Florida, we did a private school. There's a few reasons. Charter schools around here, there's different standards that we'd have to meet that we didn't want to comply with, to be quite honest.
Okay.
We didn't want to play ball and play as nicely as maybe we should have. but also, in the state of Florida, there's opportunities that most states don't have in regards to scholarships that support both children with socioeconomic challenges uh-huh. and also children with special education needs. There's actually 3 different scholarships available in Florida that almost function like vouchers. So in this state, you can be private and still access all those students. So it's not like in other states where, oh, if you're private, then you've cut yourself off from all those kids. We don't have that problem in Florida. So we were able to be private and still get access to all of those friends, which is great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really
so cool. We get the ability to be able to bring in students with all of those needs, whether it come from socioeconomic needs or mm-hmm. maybe some special education needs, and look for students who really want to be in a general education curriculum, which we know not all students who have a disability want to be in a general education curriculum. Some parents want a more specialized therapeutic curriculum, and that exists here in Florida. So we're happy that we have the spectrum of services here. and who maybe want their children to be in a 1-to-6 ratio, mm-hmm. In a class of 12. And again, we know that we have some friends who have disabilities who maybe don't want that for their kids right now. They want a more intensive experience in school, and that's great because we have that here in Florida. Mm-hmm. But if their child is looking for that and that's something that they really want their child to do, we are now an educational option for them.
So what's the overall number at your school?
We have about 65 students right now.
Okay.
This is our fourth school year, mm-hmm. so it's grown tremendously. We are now considered in the state of Florida a medium-sized school, which I find hysterical. When we started, I was like, I didn't realize that this would be considered medium when we were at a conference recently, and they said, a small school, if you have 10 or less students. I'm like, oh, my God, are there schools with 10 or less students? And a bunch of people stood up, so I was like, wow. So, we are considered medium to large at this point, so we're very excited about that.
I really like the fact you brought up the best practice piece, because I think sometimes that gets confusing, and sometimes it's hard to implement best practice, I'm glad that you modeled your school over after this. This is fascinating.
Well, and one of the ways we have to do that, it's a good point, because people say that and you're like, well, what does that mean? It means a couple things. I mean, for example, here we have 5 less school days than the public school. We stay within the range of what's legal, but we have 5 less school days for in-service trainings for our teachers. Because that's a tall order. I think that was Kate who was talking. But, Kate, that's a tall order because in order to keep teachers apprised of what's best practice for such a diverse group, we have kids here who are highly gifted. We have kids here who maybe are more ADD, ADHD. We have a number of students with Down syndrome. We have typically developing kids. We also have kids who struggle with reading and math. This is quite a diverse group of learners. So how do you get your teachers trained for that? These are general education teachers that we have. So we need to make sure that these teachers are ready. And in order to do that, our teachers get more in-service days than a public school teacher would in the state of Florida, so they can be prepared and they understand how to differentiate their lessons and break things down and support all of these types of learners. We also, again, keep their class size very small and their support very high to make sure that they have the time to do it. And that's the other thing that we had to really commit to doing.
Yeah, well, I think universally that time piece, when almost any school, public, private, I keep hearing all my teacher friends, and I, with all the new rules and regulations, they're having an incredible difficult time finding that time within the structures of their school day to help support the kids, and the teachers themselves are feeling a lot of anxiety over that because they keep looking for that additional time within their work day. And actually, having said that, I didn't realize that we were at the close of our second segment. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. And we will be right back with Stacy Taylor.
Don't you think it's time for a financial advisor who takes time to explain things? Brad Kurz, your local Edward Jones financial advisor, does. Investing can seem complicated. That's why he takes time to listen, understands your needs, and explains without jargon. Experience the Edward Jones difference. Contact Brad today, 573-221-1302. That's 221-1302. Making time to take time. That's how Edward Jones makes sense of investing. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Branching Out LLC, a premier lawn and landscaping service that can meet all your residential and commercial needs. Regardless of the season, Branching Out offers a service for maintenance-free outside living. Branching Out takes the time to listen to your needs and ensure it's done correctly the first time. If you're not satisfied, Branching Out is not satisfied. To contact Branching Out, call 573-501-0760 or visit them at www.branchingoutllc.com.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. Every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. Up at downcountry.com or call 217-617-3568. 217-617-3568 or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag every child.
Saturday, October 28th, the Mount Olivet Methodist Church in Taylor, Missouri is having their annual Lord's Acre Sale. At 11 a.m., we serve all the turkey and trimmings a person could ask for, plus dessert for a goodwill offering. Starting promptly at 12:30 is our auction that has many homemade items, including crafts, pictures, jewelry, and food. Please plan on attending.
Welcome back. This is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. And I can't believe it. We're in our final segment with Stacey Taylor on behavior. And you know what? Let's just hop right in. Stacey, anybody out there listening, what if we just talked about some basic strategies for behavior that they could take and go with? Can you give us the 101?
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. There definitely are some things that I kind of talk about as just little reminders, you know, things that sayings and things that you probably have heard before that you can just relate back to your loved one's behavior, no matter what age or stage they're in. And one of my favorites is that old saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you are working with somebody's behavior, whether it be a student, a family member, and you're not getting the result you want, do something different. Try something different. It's time to change your plan.
Amen.
So if you are not seeing something and it's been 6 months on this behavior plan, you can do something new. If it's been a week, you got to give it a little bit more time. So be reasonable in your amount of time, but don't be afraid to go back to the drawing board and try something new. Another one that I think is really important is that old Southern saying. Now, I know you guys are in the Midwest, but I'm going to throw out a Southern saying, even though Florida's not the true South. But you catch more flies with honey than you do vinegar, which is just to remind us that positive reinforcement and just positive interaction with kids always works better than punishment. Always. Redirection, being negative with kids is never the way to go. If you can be positive with your student, if you can be positive with your child, always shoot for positivity because you're going to get further faster. So it's just a little saying that, kind of, again, you probably don't hear it a lot in the Midwest, but now you can remember it. Another one that I think is really important is, and we talked about it before when we were talking about replacement behaviors, is when in doubt, teach. So you can never go wrong by teaching your student, your child, new skills. Problem behaviors are always a result of weak repertoire. And that's just fancy, nerdy science talk for if they're doing something wrong, it's because they don't know how to do something right. You got to find where that weak repertoire is and teach. So even if you don't put in a fancy schmancy behavior plan, if you just focus on good teaching, things are going to get better. And that's really a great tip for families and for teachers.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's so important. So when you're teaching, make sure that you don't forget to teach the basics. I call them the shuns, as in the T-I-O-N-S's, the shuns. Things like patience, transition, termination, i.e. telling you when to say stop or no, procrastination, and toleration. Learning those basics are so important to preventing problem behaviors from ever occurring. If your child or your student understands those shuns, they're going to have better days overall. Finally, I think my last one really has to be make sure that when you're using motivation, that you're not choosing reinforcers for your child. Give your child choice. Choice is the number one thing that humans want, all humans. This has nothing to do with a disability. That's just what humans want. So help your child by letting them help themselves. Give them power, give them choice to let you know what it is they want to earn, what it is they want to quote unquote work for, instead of telling them what they're earning and what they're working for. Variety, choice, all of these things are a great way to increase motivation and decrease the likelihood of problem behaviors.
Oh, Stacey, I think that was just fantastic. And I think those will get anybody started. And I can't believe it. I hope you'll come back on the show because, ladies and gentlemen, another Sunday has somehow flown by talking with Stacey Taylor on behavior. This is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. Keely Rager, Brad Kurz, Kate Doherty signing off. Have a blessed Sunday. Stacey, we'll have you back. Have
Thanks,
a great
Stacey.
Day.
Thanks, Stacey. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Every day.